This podcast is sponsored by the Association of the British Pharmaceutical Industry. We work so that diseases like haemophilia B don't control people's lives. We work to achieve a brighter tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So the day is finally upon us. It's the Chequers away day. The Cabinet have descended on the Prime Minister's grace and favour home, and they're not leaving until they've come to an agreement. Or at least that's the idea in principle. Fraser, you've written your Telegraph column today on why Theresa May is feeling perhaps confident about the choice she is going to give her Cabinet.
Yes, it's funny. A few days ago, the consensus in the Cabinet was this was going to be a fudge. Nothing much was going to come out of a Chequers summit because they still hadn't reached any consensus. A couple of days ago, I was speaking to a Cabinet member saying, look, if she can kick the can further down the road, she will do. But that is at odds with what is now before us. She's come up with her compromise, her kind of third way, and it's effectively staying in the single market for goods but not services. We knew that was in the air. What we didn't know was the tone she's now taking, which is, okay, I've tried to do consensus, it hasn't worked. I am now telling you to back this option, defy me if you dare. She's told Cabinet members to hand in their mobile phones when they get to Chequers, and they'll get them back at 10 p.m. And there's even comments from Number 10 saying if anybody disagrees with her, then they can take a taxi card and take a taxi out. So you've got this kind of Big Brother style eviction process where we're all going to be waiting to see if any Cabinet members, David, Davis and Boris, are taking a taxi, which isn't quite sort of Heseltine style walking out of Number 10. And the other significant thing was, as James revealed yesterday, a really quite significant thing, but Theresa May's briefing paper admits to her colleagues that her compromise would preclude a free trade deal with America. Now, it's really quite remarkable to say this in terms, almost a provocation, because for a lot of people, for a lot of the Brexiteers, certainly people like Boris Johnson, it's all about free trade. Next week, we've got Donald Trump coming to visit Britain, and are we really saying to him before he arrives that we do not want your offer of a free trade deal? So I think there's a lot of disgruntlement. The question is how hard the Brexiteers are going to push it.
Now, James, after you revealed this fact on Coffee House, Number 10 were very keen to say that actually, even though it would be perhaps not as easy as people thought it would be, it would still be possible with Theresa May's compromise to forge a free trade deal with the US. Do you buy that kind of explanation?
I was thinking for this through yesterday. I don't think there's a single trade deal the United States has signed where they have not received. This is their fundamental ask in trade negotiations, is a recognition of their standards. So, yes, if you believe that the United States, I mean, this is Number 10's argument, that the United States would cut Britain a deal, but it would not be prepared to cut anybody else and has not in its history been prepared to cut anybody else. I personally find that a stretch because that would require not only the president to back it, but a Senate where every state is represented by two senators and agricultural interests are very strong to also accept a deal that wouldn't deliver for the US agricultural sector in lots of ways. So I really do struggle to see how this US trade deal would be done. And I think that most cabinet ministers who you speak to in private, whichever side of the referendum debate they're on, basically think that that's right. Although Number 10 is completely convinced that it could still do it. I think one of the things that Fraser, I think, is right about when you talk to ministers who've read these briefing papers, they emphasise that they don't sugarcoat anything. So things are spelled out in much more brutal language than people would have expected. And I think one of the reasons for that is to be able to say to the Brexiteers, if they don't walk out today, well, you knew precisely what we were signing up to when you did this. And I think this is designed to slightly make it easier for Number 10 to go further in the negotiations in terms of compromises, because it will be clear where the pass has already been sold.
As you write, Fraser, Number 10 appear to be making a calculation that the rebels aren't enough in numbers and perhaps they won't actually go through with all their threats. We're also hearing that Boris Johnson met with David Cameron recently, perhaps last night, in a sign of the high-stakes game. There are two quite diverging accounts of what was said in those meetings. What is your impression on whether we're going to get resignations today? And I apologise for giving you a question so close to it happening.
I can't quite see it happening because, remember, this is still a proposal. Whatever they agree today will be a proposal for the white paper, which may or may not be accepted by Michel Barnier. Now, Theresa May was in Berlin yesterday saying to Angela Merkel, look, I am about to make the biggest offer I can. I'm stretching my political authority to breaking point, and Merkel will certainly know what that means. You've got to back me. But perhaps they won't. Perhaps Barnier will dismiss it out of turn, and then the talks might collapse. So if I was, you know, David Davis, and I wanted to resign, thinking that this was all about free trade and Theresa May's compromise would preclude free trade, I'd probably wait so the resignation would have more impact. A resignation now would be on Theresa May's terms. She kicks them out of the Big Brother house there in Buckinghamshire. Nobody can hear you scream, really. And, you know, it wouldn't create as much impact as a resignation later down the road would. So I'm guessing no, but it's a foolhardy thing to guess anything about British politics nowadays.
Last night, I'd have said there was a kind of 1 in 3 chance of resignations today. I think that's now down to a kind of 1 in 5 chance this morning, because I just think the meeting of the Brexiteers last night, it didn't end with people kind of, you know, preparing their resignation letters. It ended with people kind of basically looking to see how they could, they're looking at future tactics. How do we say, look, how do we say to Theresa May, okay, no concessions on this point, or let's change the language on that point.
Or let's protect free movement or something. I mean, yeah. Also, James, it's only 7 people at that meeting. There are 27 members of the cabinet. So the fact that there were just 7 Brexiteers is some indication of the numbers if Theresa May were to call a vote today.
Now, one of the problems Theresa May is going to face when she faces off the Brexiteers today is the argument that we think comes from David Davis, which is, why offer so many concessions if Brussels isn't going to accept them anyway? Because you're putting so much on the table only for them to either say no, or, as it has also been described, say yes, but then do the lobster pot strategy. So get us to a point where they then put things like freedom of the movement back on the table later on down the line, and it's very hard to withdraw. James, do you think Theresa May is going to have an answer to that?
I think her answer is, we just got to get on the dance floor. And to get on the dance floor, we need to do these things. I think one of the things that, so for example, the inclusion of agri-foods, right? That is something that I know lots of Brexiteers don't like this, but they thought this might be something that's the thing that frankly makes the US deal the most difficult, is that inclusion of agri-foods. I think that they thought, oh, maybe we'll offer up agri-foods in the negotiation. If we offer up agri-foods now, what compromises are we prepared to make further on from this in the negotiation? That is what worries a lot of Brexiteers. A lot of Brexiteers look at this and say, well, hang on a second, there's no way that this is going to be the final deal. The EU aren't just going to take the UK proposal and say, great, let's rubber stamp that. So what cards do we have left in the hand to throw away when we need to in the negotiation? I mean, that is one of the big fears that people have. And David Davis's critique of the whole way that the negotiation has been conducted, which is rather ironic, considering that when he was appointed, we thought he would be conducting the negotiation. It is hard, I think, in some ways, to disagree with this argument that the UK is basically just offering up concession after concession, which the EU pockets each time and moves on.
I think this is the great danger. It'd be a grave mistake for Barnier to ask for even more. But this is a mistake they made with David Cameron. They didn't give him the deal he wanted, trying to call his bluff. In the end, Britain voted to leave the EU due to the EU's failure to properly negotiate and to work out that Cameron really was going as far as he possibly could. Now, going back to your lobster pot, Katie, if Barnier does say, I want more concessions, we might end up with, well, our podcast editor Cindy Yu was telling me of this video in China where there's a picture of a lobster being boiled who then claws off his own hand in order to escape from the pot. And I think this is what the Brexiteers might then do. If Barnier does refuse this deal, they might have a rebellion in the back benches and the rest of the cabinet, because I think the Theresa May right now really will try to take a cabinet to breaking point. Will the EU recognise that? I wouldn't put money on it.
I also think that when I read the briefing in the Politico morning email about, you know, taxi cards in the hall, if anyone wants to call that, I also wondered if that was actually aimed at European capitals as much as it was aimed at a domestic audience. Because what I pick up from people is that there is a sense in Europe that until Theresa May has some resignations from her cabinet, they won't take her proposal seriously. They won't believe that she really has pushed things as far as she can until someone walks out. So I almost wondered if that briefing was designed to be picked up and noted in the chancelleries of Europe and the corridors of a commission building in Brussels to basically say, look, if they are still there, it is because they have capitulated, not because I haven't confronted them.
Now, finally, in a sign of how fraught tensions are at the moment, Number 10 haven't been able to offer any ministers yet for any of the Sunday shows, such as The Mars Show, because Theresa May is believed to want to have some Brexiteers to go out and sing the praises of the plan, but is yet to work out who will still be in place. James Fraser, who do you think is going to be singing her praises on Sunday?
Well, I know that yesterday, Number 10, were lining up Brexiteers saying, what are your plans for Saturday? Will you go out and sell this deal? They want to have, I don't know, Liam Fox, David Davis, Boris Johnson to go out and say this compromise is good. They want to sell it to the rest of the party. The response Number 10 was getting, that a lot of these people had other plans. They were washing their hair, going off to Afghanistan. And
football.
Well, football, yes. I didn't know people were going to be too drunk after 5 o'clock to be any use to the Sunday political shows the next morning. It will remain to be seen, but I think there is the prospect here of, say, take Liam Fox, for example. If he were to go out and sell the deal, might he end up with a promotion as a result? So remember, people are thinking about the leadership as well. It's not just the Brexit deal we're thinking about today. We're thinking, might she be gone after March next year? Who is likely to win? The person likely to win would have to be a unifying figure. That figure might be a Eurosceptic who voted to remain, like Sajid Javid, or perhaps a Michael Gove figure, who was a leading figure for the Brexit campaign, but was able to compromise and was able to think, we'll do this in stages. So it wouldn't entirely surprise me if the sort of person you otherwise might have thought of resigning ends up selling the compromise with a view to the leadership in March. So I think it will be worth keeping an eye on these Sunday shows to see who has had a Damascene conversion to Theresa May's third way.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And if you like this podcast, do remember to subscribe and also give us a review on the iTunes store. And for a limited time, you can try a month of The Spectator online for free in our summer sale. Just go to spectator.co.uk/summer to start your free trial today.
Disease affects all of us, but in the next 5 years, cutting-edge developments funded by the Association of the British Pharmaceutical Industry will change the lives of patients with blood cancers, diabetes, Alzheimer's and more. We are the research-based pharmaceutical industry in the UK. With over 7,000 new medicines in development, we won't rest until everyone affected by disease can look forward to a brighter tomorrow. Visit abpi.org.uk to find out about our work.